Welcome to Let's Talk Micro. Hello, my dear audience. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And before I continue, I'm sure you can tell by my voice, but I'm fighting a little bit of a cold, so that's why it might sound a little different, but very happy to be here, very happy to be doing this episode, so I'm going to keep the intro a little short. But I am going to say that I recently had my ceremony for my graduation for my master's, and it was such a great ceremony, and I enjoyed it so much, right? That sense of fulfillment that I did this, I completed this, so I'm very happy about that. As always, you can find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, Good Pods, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. As far as social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Blue Sky Social as Let's Talk Micro, on X as Let's Talk Micro 1, on LinkedIn as Luis Plaza, and I have an email address, which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can reach out with any feedback, any topic suggestions. They are always welcome and appreciated. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please go ahead and leave a review. Thank you so much for the support. And of course, if you are looking to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com and the Learn Antibiotics book available on Amazon. These resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more, and they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. And these are some great resources from Dr. Timothy Gauthier, a very passionate pharmacist. If you haven't checked out the previous episode, please go ahead and do so. It was a great episode about my favorite organism, which is Pastorella. And this episode was inspired because I recently had Dr. Kelly Maddock again on the podcast, and she came in to talk about Pastorella multocida and capsular types. A very great episode, so if you haven't listened to that one, definitely check it out. So having recorded that episode, I thought it was a good time to do a more detailed episode about Pastorella. So I went ahead and did that, and as always, you know, I talked about the different species, diseases, morphology, biochemicals. All the things that as microbiologists on the bench, you know, we need to know, and then some. You know, I touched a little bit on susceptibilities, but definitely a great episode, so check it out if you haven't already. Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about today's episode. And even if you work in microbiology, if you work in the bench, or if you don't, you know, you definitely hear about healthcare-associated infections, you hear about outbreaks. And when it comes to healthcare-associated infections, right, you hear about things like MRSA, VRE, you know, hear about your non-fermenting gram-negative rot surviving in hospital equipment, and you hear of things like Listeria and Salmonella associated with food outbreaks. But what about a healthcare-associated infection or an outbreak involving healthcare linens? Have you heard about those? Right, maybe if you keep up with all the literature or maybe you hear the news, you might sometimes, you know, you might be familiar with them. I mean, I definitely wasn't, but it makes sense. So in this episode, I have a guest who's Dr. Alexander Sunderman, and he's a doctor of public health from the University of Pittsburgh. And he joins the podcast to talk about an article that he published that it was about healthcare linens and mold. So in the episode, he talks about the study, you know, he talks about mucormycosis, he talks about the lack of federal regulations involving healthcare linens. So definitely a great episode. And Dr. Sunderman, you know, he does a lot of work with whole genome sequencing and epidemiology. So at some point in time, you know, he will be back on the podcast to talk some more, but definitely a great episode. So let's go ahead and listen to it. So whether you are, let's say, a bench microbiologist or you're a student in microbiology or you're related somehow to the field, and I'm sure that as you're studying sometimes in the lab, you work with organisms, and when you hear healthcare-associated infections, you definitely get familiar with, you know, you hear things like your non-fermenting gram-negative rots, and you think about, you know, sometimes hospital equipment, you know, ventilators and things like that. And this article was very interesting because it was about healthcare linens. Something that I hadn't, you know, thought much about. So the article was titled Healthcare Linens, an Under-Recognized Risk in Infection Prevention and Control. It was published in October 2nd, 2024 in Infection Control Today. So with me today, I have the author of the article to chat a little bit about healthcare linens. Here at Let's Talk Micro, we have Dr. Alexander Sunderman. Dr. Sunderman, welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Thanks for having me, Luis. Great to be here. Been a big fan of your podcast for a while, so I'm happy to be on the show.
Definitely great having you. And it's one of those things for the audience, and we met last year, and sometimes, you meet someone and you're like, oh, this will be a good guest and a great guest for the podcast. And fortunately, it takes time while finding like the correct topic and getting, everyone's schedule, and but it's finally happened today. So I'm very happy about that. Okay, so for the audience, maybe you can start, telling them a little bit about what you do and anything else that you want to share.
Yeah, definitely. So I started out originally as an infection preventionist, but I got into that field years ago. So my undergraduate degree is in microbiology. I worked as a bench research scientist at that time with Canada Albicans at the time. But I know there's lots of name changes for that organism now. But then I went and did my Master's of Public Health in infectious diseases. And that's when I really got involved with healthcare and healthcare-associated infections and working as an infection preventionist. So during my time as an IP, as we call it, I had the opportunity to investigate a lot of interesting outbreaks at that time. And that's one of the things that we're going to be talking about today with healthcare linens, which was, as we were just talking about, one of the first outbreaks I ever looked into. And it's a lasting one that stays with me. But ever since then, I eventually did my doctorate of public health in epidemiology while working as an IP, and now work as faculty here at the University of Pittsburgh, where I research outbreaks and using genomic sequencing. So I have a really big passion for outbreaks because I always feel like they provide an opportunity to learn because obviously something went wrong. And that's what we can, learn from this type of outbreak and linens more broadly. Which, again, is a topic I'm a passionate about, and which is why I wrote that this article for Infection Control today.
Excellent. And like I pointed at the beginning, so sometimes, especially, me as a bench microbiologist, and we definitely, we hear things, we hear MRSA, we hear, VRE, we hear definitely, as I mentioned, the non-fermenting gram-negative rods and big surviving things in hospital equipment, things like that. And maybe some of us, might not be too familiar, as I said, with healthcare linens and outbreaks. So that's why I found it so interesting. So maybe if you can talk a little bit about what type of outbreaks, have been associated with healthcare linens.
Yeah, so there was a great review of healthcare linen-associated outbreaks, which are a bit sporadic because whenever we think of an outbreak, proving the causative source of transmission can be very difficult because of temporality and directionality. Because typically, when we have an outbreak, we have a bunch of cases, so we're doing these cultures, and we have to ask, did the patients contaminate the thing we're culturing or vice versa. But it's interesting though, because with healthcare linens and the life cycle of them, which we can talk about, typically when you have clean linens coming onto patients, that's an easy source for directionality. So if your linens are positive and your patients are positive, you can typically prove that linens might be part of an outbreak. But organisms involved in healthcare linens in the outbreak have been primarily reserved to Bacillus species. For bacteria, because they're pretty hardy and they can survive some of the reprocessing steps for linens. But then more broadly, molds have been more implicated in outbreaks, specifically Aspergillus molds, and then we get into the Mucorales type molds as well, are pretty well known to be associated with some type of linen contamination and associated with an outbreak.
I mean, it all makes sense when you mention bacillus, and definitely because of the surviving all different conditions, and so definitely we can understand that. So maybe if you can tell the audience just a little bit about mucormycosis.
Yeah, so mucormycosis, and again, I'm not a clinician by background training, so these are all things I read, so take that with a grain of salt. Mucormycosis is the invasive infection for from Mucorales type molds. So typically it's whenever the mold invades the tissues or actually causes the invasive infection. And these can be through the sinuses, through diabetic patients. Those can be typically seen there as well. But then wound infections, skin infections, and then you get into the more invasive infections through lungs, pneumonia, and that type of things. But the problem with mucormycosis is that there's a very high mortality associated with it. It's really, really difficult to treat. Often you'll have to do an aggressive debridement type approach with some inhaled antifungal agents, which can be, pretty intense side effects as well. So there's a really high mortality associated with it. So that's why we always try to focus on prevention of these types of things. And like I mentioned, diabetic patients are at risk, immunocompromised patients are at risk, transplant patients are at risk. So focusing on those patient populations for prevention is really key. But it's difficult when we think about prevention because molds are everywhere. One of my old micro director always said, if we didn't have molds, the leaves would be piled high to the sky. So molds are important to have, but how do we best prevent these in both our patients through when they're in the hospital, but also prevention efforts whenever these patients are at home? And those are the types of things we think for preventing mucormycosis.
Yeah, and I like that you mentioned that because something also when I'm teaching and telling the students and that is true, it's the molds in the air and normally we're healthy enough and we don't have doesn't do anything to us and then when you get to a lot of immunocompromised scenarios, that's when you start seeing more cases like that and but definitely very interesting hearing about the leaves, so I'll remember that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So, and the article, for the audience, I'm going to put it on the show notes so you can definitely read it at your own pace and more detail. So in there, you mentioned that there are no federal regulations regarding, healthcare linens. And I was wondering maybe you could expand a little bit more on that.
Yeah. So linens are, extremely important part of the healthcare experience. Interestingly, linens touch every patient at every single part of the way, from the beds that patients lay on, the sheets, the blankets, the pillowcases. When you go to operating rooms, there are linens used there as well. So linens are just ubiquitous in the healthcare environment. And when we think about regulations, there are strict regulations for reprocessing of certain devices. Sterilization, the AAMI standards for reprocessing. There are cleaning standards for surfaces to disinfect, and Joint Commission regulations that oversee those. But very interestingly, healthcare linens are not a regulated item by federal standards. So the FDA does not oversee it like we think of medication and devices and things like that. They're unregulated. So essentially, what that means in a way is that I could launder linens at my home and essentially give them to hospitals, and that meets regulations in a sense. So the cleaning processes are not regulated. There are obviously recommendations of what to do. There are trade associations that I mentioned in this article, the TRSA and HLAC and things like that, that give very detailed recommendations of this is the type of disinfectants you should use in your tunnel washers. This is the heat that you should achieve. This is how you should handle them. But hospitals don't need to abide by those standards. They're just third-party recommendations of good practice. A hospital can go to any laundering facility and essentially get their linens laundered there, or even do them internally, and that is completely okay. So there's a that's the big issue, is that when we think about the issues of outbreaks related to healthcare linens, no one oversees those as well. So that makes kind of a regulatory issue.
And that is so interesting, because as we have mentioned, it's something that is so commonly used all over the hospital, right? So you would think that there will be more regulation about it, how it's used, that it goes to patients with different, conditions and things like that. So yeah, definitely very interesting.
And that's a big issue when the CDC looks into some of these outbreaks, is that we can prove that linens have been a source of these outbreaks, but essentially we can't point to any regulations of you need to improve this. Regulation meaning that there's oversight and enforcement. So it makes it really difficult to remediate some of these outbreaks as well.
Definitely. So I know that and you mentioned this in the article, but I know you got involved with a bit of performing and you actually got involved in a study. Can you talk about this?
Yeah, so we had an outbreak of mucormycosis at our one hospital, and throughout this investigation, we were trying to pinpoint where could the cause of this outbreak be happening. And there's a role for environmental cultures in an outbreak investigation. And that role is relatively limited, but it helps in finding potential sources of transmission and narrowing down your hypothesis of where transmission that may be occurring. So in the course of this outbreak, we did, extensive environmental cultures. And the only thing positive for Mucorales molds were our healthcare linens. And part of that process was, we had to review prior mucormycosis outbreaks in the published literature, see where things were positive. Prior to us, there were reports of tape. The tape that you use for IVs had been contaminated with Mucorales, tongue depressors, things like that. But a select few outbreaks related to linens. There was a really interesting outbreak of mucormycosis at a pediatric hospital in New Orleans that had, a lot of media press as well. So we did a lot of cultures of our linens and obviously other parts of our hospital as well. And the only thing positive were our linens. So that prompted us to, let's look into the actual linen process to see if we can figure out where this might be coming from.
Okay, and yeah, on a as we talk about this, and I mentioned this before, it's definitely something as the more you learn and the more you know, especially as a microbiologist, you look at things differently, right? And you're always thinking about that stuff as if you're outside or things like your shoes and where you step and you were talking about as we talk about mold and things like that, it just came to mind about I did this trip to Bolivia in 2022, and we went to this hotel that it, hotel, you know. It was like very elevated and a very high point. They shut the power off after 9 p.m. their time, and we go to the room and it's dark. And I remember next to the bed, there was like this black on the wall. That I'm like, nope. I'm just so I slept the whole night with the mask on, and I didn't even change or anything. I just spending the night and getting out of there. So it was quite the experience, spending the whole night with a mask. I never done that in my life, but it's just something that came to mind.
Yeah, it's interesting. When we look for environmental molds, we think, the obvious, maybe a drywall that got wet and you can see like a pattern that, looks like mold. And we can't, definitively say it's mold. We obviously looks like mold. And that's, high concentrations of molds. But at the same time, as like we mentioned before at the beginning of the podcast, the air we breathe contains molds in it as well, even Aspergillus that we breathe in. So at a broader point, a big point of question is what is the amount of mold needed to cause an infection in any type of patient? And that's something that, to this day has not really been fully understood.
So maybe you can talk more about the, about there's a difficulty, right, about detecting, these outbreaks involving healthcare linens.
Yeah, and when we think of mucormycosis outbreaks too, it's not necessarily a common disease. So when we think of the epidemic curve or the number of patients involved in an outbreak, it shouldn't take a facility a lot of cases to start an outbreak investigation. In our case, we just had, a handful for patients in it, or three patients initially to start the investigation in itself, three patients for an outbreak. And that's because these infections are very uncommon in themselves. So, like I mentioned, we wanted to look into our healthcare linens. And what we had to do is we had to look at the entire process for the healthcare linens that are at our outside facility and culturing them. And the difficulty in, detecting these outbreaks and doing these investigations is sometimes it's hard to recover the actual mold in itself from the environment. In an environmental culture, we always say that a negative culture is not necessarily a negative finding. It's just that you didn't find it on that surface at that time. So through, a limited amount of cases for an outbreak and the difficulty in recovering it from the environment can make it really difficult to actually detect these outbreaks and investigate them.
Okay, so then, there's this actually, so there was eventually there was a larger study performed, right? Which actually, named mold. Maybe can you talk more about that and some of the findings?
Yes, so we my one colleague is French and prefers the MOULD acronym spelling for mold. the Mukerales on Unclean Linen Discovery Study. So it was prompted by, some of our findings from our outbreak study. And to go, actually, to go back to our outbreak study, it makes, for the flow in itself, our outbreak study, we visited our linen reprocessing facility because we wanted to pinpoint where could the mold actually be coming from our facility, because we had evidence that, clean linen was coming into our hospital right off of the truck, contaminated with Mukerales molds that were potentially causing the infections for our outbreak. So we knew somewhere outside at that facility there was going to be an issue, and we had to find the contamination. So the process in itself, what we had to do to systematically evaluate it was take cultures of the linen at different steps in the process to say where could this contamination actually be happening. And what we found is immediately after the linens were dried, so the linens were washed, they were dried, sorted, packaged. After they were dried is where we found a statistical significance and increase of Mukerales and contamination. So we said, well, what could be happening at that dryer step? And when we had, if you think about the dryer in your own home, you can do different heat levels sometimes, low heat, no heat, high heat. And these linens are cleaned and are dried in these giant industrial, dryers that are on high heat. And in order for someone working there to handle the linen and not actually get burned, they have to cool those linens down rapidly, really quick, because they were super hot. And in order to do that, they have to bring in lots of air. And because that air has to be brought in so rapidly, it actually can't be filtered or else the filter would combust. So we said, let's look at what air is being brought in to cool down these, newly cleaned, newly dried linens. And the filter, or the sorry, the intake where the air was being brought in was on the roof. And on the roof where we went up there, it was just, a thick layer of lint. If you think about the dryer, vent of your dryer, if you don't, get rid of that lint, that's actually a fire hazard there too. But you can see that buildup. And that, imagine that on top of a roof that's wet and everything, which was, filled with molds. And that was directly next to the vent that was bringing in the air down onto the newly cleaned linens. So essentially, we were able to pinpoint that these linens were being contaminated because unfiltered outside air next to piles of lint was being brought down onto them. And we were able to eventually remediate our own third-party laundering facility to, get rid of all that lint, where we now have negative testing linen with no Mukerales on it whatsoever. So we wanted to take, our experience in finding these issues with the linen facility to, is it just a problem at our own hospital of having these linens contaminated with Mukerales, or could it be other facilities at the United States as well? Because, like we mentioned, healthcare linens are unregulated completely. So what we did is we visited a total of 15 centers, large transplant facilities, cancer centers across the United States, various geographic locations. Went to these facilities, and immediately as the linens arrived at their hospital, which was sometimes at 1 a.m. or 3 a.m., which made for some interesting journeys, we cultured those linens as they showed up to see what are the mold, pathogenic fungi burden of these clean linens being brought on to their patients. And that was what we wanted to actually investigate. Was it just a our facility problem, or is it more a systematic hospital problem across the US?
And was it a systematic problem?
It was. We found a good bit of contamination across the board at all these facilities. We, like I mentioned, healthcare linens are not regulated, so setting what is clean is difficult. We set, it was an arbitrary threshold of 10% of linens that were cultured or less be under there. And we found multiple centers that 7 out of 15 centers had Mukerales on their actual linens themselves, meaning that there is a chance that these linens would transmit it to other patients at those facilities. And a lot of these centers too had high levels of Aspergillus contamination as well. I mean, one facility had over 50% of their linens had some level of Aspergillus on them too. So obviously, these are quote clean linens being brought in for patient use that we're able to show are just contaminated with different types of molds.
Wow, that's definitely, so interesting. The whole process and as you mentioned, there are no regulations, right? And but maybe there'd be some guidelines, right? So are there any, that for the use of healthcare linens?
So that's the hope. And the issue of setting guidelines is, and these third-party trade organizations also mention it, is what there's a definition called hygienically clean, because things aren't necessarily have to be sterile, but they need to be hygienically clean, which is, insufficient amount of pathogens to cause infection. But what is that threshold is the big scientific question, and how do we determine what that threshold is? And as I mentioned earlier in our chat, is that how many colonies of mold are needed to cause an infection in a patient, by what route of exposure? So designing a study to look at, what percent recovery of molds or pathogenic fungi or colonies, and how many linens do you need to sample over what time period to say these are clean linens that will not cause infection? That's a really, really difficult answer or question to answer. So when we think about what type of regulation should there be, is also a difficult answer. And what department or what regulatory agency should oversee that? Because currently there is no oversight whatsoever, and we don't have that threshold. So I don't think we're necessarily close to getting to that regulation. What we did point out, though, is that through our experience, we are able to get to a point where we culture our linens that we don't have any we don't have any growth on our own linens, and subsequently, we don't observe any cases of hospital-acquired mucormycosis. So I think, we're trying to push hospitals to that direction that, first of all, test your linens, because even if you don't have a problem right now, if you don't know what your baseline level of contamination, whether that's zero colonies or some level of colonies, when you actually suspect you have a problem, you won't have any baseline to compare it to. So that's going to be the first step. And then the second step too is, I think, we work together with other professional societies and groups and talking to other facilities that might have had issues as well to say, what could you get your levels of contamination down to where you see no more observed cases? And I think sharing those experiences with other hospitals is going to be really important to move that needle to maybe we can get to a better level of what is hygienically clean.
I like that, and your article in this episode, also, hope the hope is, that it brings more awareness about this, so people know more. So definitely, as you mentioned, right, prevention is very important, and as we hear you talk and your findings, and we can definitely think about some things, right, like about like making sure that the facilities where things the linens are processed, they're those areas, they're like free of mold or so things like that. So anything that you can talk more about, steps towards prevention?
Yeah, so the CDC had published, which I cite in the article, this great tool for infection preventionists to use when they visit their facility. So if you're an IP and you haven't visited your laundering facility, definitely go out and explore it because it's an interesting experience. So they provide these checklists of, like we've mentioned, no visible dirtiness anywhere, no lint accumulation. Auditing the process just to make sure that nothing stands out. And part of that too, I think, should be inspecting the roof, just as we did, because that was a major source of our issue. So the limitation of our multi-center study is that we didn't visit the laundering facilities associated with these centers. We just did culture recovery. So we suspect that if we were able to visit some of these facilities, that we could potentially see some issues for remediation. So when we talk about prevention, it's really about, working with your third-party laundering facility, not necessarily working against them, partnering with them to identify areas that might be issues that could be causing contamination. And just as I mentioned too before, having some baseline levels of contamination of what is coming into your hospital so that you have something to go off of when you think that you might have a problem.
Excellent. And as far as, any advice, for in order to gain a better understanding on this subject?
It's a big passion of mine to research outbreaks because I mentioned at the beginning, outbreaks are always an opportunity to understand what went wrong because there's something going wrong and it helps us better identify it. And we've been very privileged that we can share our experiences and publish them because I think publishing your outbreaks is really, really key because it acts as not only did we identify a problem, but we remediated it. But it's an opportunity for other facilities out there who may be going through something very similar in an outbreak to help them identify their issues, just as we did when we were investigating our initial outbreak. But also as well that it acts as potentially preventative measures as well. Separate from this outbreak, we published an outbreak experience for vancomycin-resistant enterococci related to interventional radiology. And I know from publishing that other facilities went and audited their own interventional radiology procedures, even though they didn't suspect they had an outbreak, just because it was such a glaring issue. They said, "Oh, let me go look at, make sure that ours is okay." So I think, publishing outbreaks is a really good practice to help other facilities. And just from my own personal experience, I've, worked with other facilities that have suspected mold-related linen outbreaks that I know aren't able to easily as publish these. But I really encourage other facilities, if you're going through an outbreak, regardless, is it linen, is it mold-related, to work through it and then to really try to publish it because working off of the published literature is going to move that needle to get us a better understanding of how common this problem is and what type of measures can we do to better prevent them. So definitely try to, urge the publish.
Yeah, definitely. And that's such a so sharing of information, publishing, yeah, it's very important. As the episode comes to an end, is there anything else that you want to add or tell the audience about?
Well, I think when in the process of looking into this outbreak with linens and molds, but even all outbreaks in general, is that it's a definitely a multidisciplinary approach because I can't tell you how many hours I spent in the micro lab with the mold bench and the fungal bench looking at these plates with them and learning a ton too. And vice versa, they would come with us and help us do some cultures and things like that. And then we would work with the clinicians to get a better understanding of the disease process. So this entire process is not just, one department or one area. It's everybody working together to push it forward to get a better understanding. And I think, as we progress to getting better linen standards or better understanding of the burden of that, we really have to keep that in mind is that we need linen experts, lab experts, infection prevention experts, clinical experts, et cetera, to really work together to move that needle forward. So if you're going through an outbreak at your facility, just keep that in mind, that really bring in all those people together to get a better understanding of what the issues might be for your facility.
Well said. It's definitely a team effort, and all the parties working together. And I like that. It involves lab, infection prevention, everyone just working together. Dr. Sunderman, it's been a pleasure. As I said, I wanted to chat with you before, and I'm so happy that it finally happened. So, thank you so much for taking the time to come to Let's Talk Micro.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on, and pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. And that, my dear audience, it's the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode about healthcare linens with Dr. Alexander Sunderman. I definitely enjoyed chatting with him, and at some point in time, he will be back, maybe to talk about whole genome sequencing. So, as always, Continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. And as always, you know, thank you for your support. You know, I made it, got my master's, very happy. Always grateful for you listening. And definitely stay tuned. Great things coming your way. So, as always, stay motivated, stay safe, and of course, continue talking micro. Until the next time. Bye.